Welcome to Black Girl in CLE, the podcast. I am your host, Shayna Black, and in each episode, my special guest and I will talk about local events, the topic of access in Cleveland, and sometimes we'll just talk about some cool people who are doing cool things in the greater Cleveland area. I'll introduce you to this week's guest right after this. This episode is brought to you by The Beck Center. The Beck Center's theater season begins this month with performances of Elf, Something Rotten, Broadway Bound, and The Exonerated. Also check out the youth season featuring performances of Disney's High School Musical, Little Tech Shop of Horrors, and Bugsy Malone. Learn more about all of these performances at beckcenter.org. Hey everyone, welcome to the show. Today, my guest is Colleen Jackson, director of The Exonerated, that's coming to the Beck Center in October. Welcome to the show, Colleen.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Of course. So for many people that don't know, tell us about what The Exonerated is. What's it about?
Well, it's a story it's not really your traditional style of a play where you come in and you meet your main characters and you follow them through. It's unique in that it is a play version of some interviews of exonerated people. So our main characters are all based off real people telling their real stories. They come from interviews that were done. There were several, I think they did over 90 different interviews with exonerated people, and they had tons of material. They pulled six stories, and that is where you get what has become the play Exonerated. So what's so interesting about it is it's diverse in terms of the six exonerated individuals. There is one woman who was, I believe, one of the first. Well, she was the only person on death row at the time she was put on death row. That's what it is. It's a story. And so when you talk about it, it's like, oh gosh, what a downer. But it's really quite a story about resilience. You know, these people have different, they all differ in terms of how long they stayed on death row and what their experience was like. But it is shocking when you hear their stories. It definitely speaks to the human ability to just persevere. And it's a little scary in that reality that it could happen to anyone.
I understand.
So
help me out just with the story, because I haven't seen it. I know it's gone around the country and played on different stages. Do we learn about their experience while they were still in jail and locked up, or are we picking up after they've gotten out and kind of follow them with reentry? Although they don't necessarily have to reentry.
Right. So it's really them telling their stories about what happened to them. Interspersed in the piece are flashbacks to, you know, maybe moments in the courtroom or moments in the prison or moments, you know, the moments that are surrounding the events that led to their incarcerations. But we're talking to all of our characters after they've been set free. So they're all after they've been exonerated. So they're talking about, the most impactful parts of their experience. I mean, there's one character who was incarcerated for 22 years and his interview took place when he was 45 years old. So you're talking about someone who almost half of his life was spent incarcerated for something he didn't do. And what's unique about it is we are talking to all of them after they've been set free. So there's already, you know, it's not like, you know, help me get out. That's a different energy, right? That, you know, if I'm talking to you from within, trying to get you to advocate for me, these are people who have managed to be exonerated, but they are telling us their stories and the important pieces of their life, so we don't really delve much into what is it like to try and reacclimate into society. It's really not about that. I think that's part of what my storytelling is, because they are telling it from the outside, creating the world outside that they exist in. And that's what I'm most excited about and trying to be really thoughtful about.
What do you think most people don't know, or what do you think would be the kind of surprising tidbit
from watching this of them being on the outside. You know, many times we see the story of, hey, they got out. The news will give us so-and-so's getting so much money now because they got out, because they sued the court. But what is it that you think people don't know that they're going to learn from this?
I think that people have an idea of the brokenness of our justice system. And I think that because of the current climate of our community, a lot of people are trying to block out that criticism because they are trying to put it just to, oh, Black people are having this complaint again. You know, anybody who knows anything about the system, we know it was created to, you know, recreate the so-called institution we got emancipated from, you know, the whole free-ishness.
Right.
So we know what it was created for. So a lot of times that the brokenness of the system falls on deaf ears. I think what we're going to learn is just how broken it is, right? And this is just a glimpse. You know, there has to be so many mistakes made and so much injustice just in these six stories that it helps you to kind of get an idea of big picture. If this could happen to them, you know, I think what it helps us also is have an entry point for empathy. You know, sympathy and empathy are very different. If we can be empathetic to people who have experienced this, find some way to connect with them. It is such a far removed idea of an occurrence that's even possible for most of us. But when you realize the families that they were in, the places they grew up in, the things they experienced, you realize that you are connected, you know? And I think that that's another thing that you learn from this. It's a different level of compassion. It's a different level of caring for people. It's a different level of just awareness of the brokenness of our justice system. And it, I don't know, it sparked in me just in reading it, a desire to almost like an obligation to try to do something, right? You know, 'cause it just made me think about you. I mean, as a woman of color and a Black woman in particular, you know how often people are incarcerated for things they didn't do, or how they get extra long sentences as compared mm-hmm. to their non-Black peers.
Right.
But it really makes you consider how many people are sitting there and have years of their lives taken away for something they didn't do, based off biases held by, you know, just people we live with every day, or, you know, the political pressure to solve cases and not leave them out there. You know, I just think it does not allow you to walk away from it pretending not to get it.
Okay. So tell me this, though. I think the logical question I'm having after all you've just said is, how do I walk away? Do I walk away empowered, like we need to change? Do I walk away angry and just heavy? Just what's that from as you direct this show, what's the feeling you want people to take away as they leave the theater?
That's such a great question, because we're about to go into rehearsals here in the next couple of weeks. And that's one of the things that I am constantly aware of, right? In a time where we really need an uplift, where we're just coming out of COVID and we're coming out of the George Floyd and just the kind of eye-opening that's happening across the country to a lot of issues that have always existed. What do I want them to come away from this story with? It's a couple things. It's recognizing the power of your voice and your choice, right? Because it's a choice to ignore things until they directly affect you. And I think that that is what we have done as a people. Well, you know, that's not my business. I'm going to stay out of it. Then all of a sudden it hits you and it becomes the cause for which you die, right? I think I want people to walk away with the recognition of there are things worth fighting for, talking about, that might not affect me directly right now, but a challenge to choose to kind of be involved and care about causes that don't directly affect you. That's the activism piece, right? What I want you to do when you leave, you know, right. I want you to sign up for how can we support people? how not everybody gets a settlement. Some people, it's, I mean, there's one character in the story who it was revealed that she was not guilty, that someone had lied in 1979, and she wasn't released until 1992.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, exactly. So there, everybody doesn't get like a lottery ticket.
The millions of dollars and stuff, right?
We're like, oh, but they got millions, they're good. No, first of all, the time lost cannot be purchased back. Right. But not everybody even gets that. And so, you know, there are people who are just out here. And aside from just a realization that you don't know another person's trauma, I think it should help us to treat each other better, because I don't have to tell you my story. That doesn't mean I don't have one. And if, and how we suffer from other people's mistakes, even after the fact, you know, so something happened to me that's not my fault, but I have to suffer lifelong consequences because of it. I just think it will spark people to be a little bit more empathetic in their day-to-day interactions. That's that. But overall, you know, it's a piece of work. How do I want them to actually leave the theater feeling? I want to highlight the resilience of the human spirit, but not just the resilience, because it's not just the after the fact. To me, what's the most impactful is how you endure, right? So we always talk about how people recover, but we don't necessarily talk about how people endure and how, you know, and, you know, this happened to me and I endured this for 7 years. What is it that you as an individual endured? And how did you do it? And how are you better or worse for it? Because the truth is, we're not always better for circumstances. We can turn around and come out on the other end. But when you go through something traumatic, it's difficult. And while most people, let's say 99% of my audience, will not have experienced wrongful incarceration, they may have endured something else awful that no one mm-hmm. ever knows about. What was that process like, that endurance? So while they're telling us the stories and they're recounting their events, I want them to be able to look at these characters and identify characteristics and qualities within them that are evidences of their enduring abilities and make a connection with them that way and say, you know what? I have endured something and I am strong and I am resilient. And while it might not rise to the level of what we see here, it is no less impactful to your own individual life. And most people sitting in the audience will have something that they've overcome or endured or experienced. Not everyone, but most people, depending on what your life story is, you know, even if it's proximity to trauma, if you've gone through something with someone you love, if you are, you know, in a relationship with someone who is damaged in some way, you're enduring their healing with them. Maybe you had a difficult childhood or a difficult marriage or an abusive relationship that you endured for however long you did. What was that that kept you alive here to tell your story today? So hopefully by the time we open, I'll have it all I'll have it all worked out. But I think that a lot of the answers to those questions are going to come out of what the artists bring to the storytelling. And I don't want to necessarily predict and prescribe it. I want it to happen organically, but I am going to be very careful because I don't want them to just feel bad for those six people. If that's all they do, then there's nothing that can come from it. I don't think you should endure difficult stories without it having a purpose, a greater purpose. We've done enough sad and enough devastation for a year. So
that's why I asked the question.
Yeah. I mean, and it's always at the front of my mind, you know, the truth is, if we stop listening to the difficult stories now, because we're at emotional overload, there's so many people whose suffering we'll ignore because we just don't have capacity. So right. What I want us to do as a people, and what I try to do, is to take it in doses, but use it for something. If I don't use it for something, if I'm not able to engage in a different conversation, advocate for a different group of people this way, look at foundations that are started for children with incarcerated parents, some way to be a better citizen. I think that if I can inspire people to look for better citizen opportunities, then I've done my job. You know, everybody's not going to want to meet exonerated people. And, you know, most exonerated people don't want to be known for that. You know, they don't want to be contacted. Don't come right. and say how sad you are for me. But there are many things that are going to be long lasting effects on them that we can contribute to help bring awareness and voice to.
Like, that's deep. And I'm just sitting here kind of processing all you just said. It's not that I don't have a question for you, but, you know, it's deep. And just the thought of some of us are at capacity emotionally, mm-hmm. but it's still exactly what you said. We can't back away from it. Like, the struggle's not over, the fight's not over. And many of us are impacted by, especially this story. Like, we know someone who's been locked up, even if they're not wrongfully accused. You know, we have a lot of folks that know the criminal justice system better than they want to. Let's say it that way.
Exactly. And that's what I think is something about this piece that's interesting. It's not because you're following six individuals and their stories. It's the brokenness of the system, but it's also, you know, the abuses that happen within institutions. It is the fracture in families because of incarceration, wrongful or not. You know, if I come there and I have had an incarcerated family member, then you know what that does to your family and that family structure. There are many educators who see this kind of work and they think differently when they leave about their students, when they know that they have an incarcerated parent, sibling, family member, and how to just handle them more trauma-informed. You know, it's just, it gives an awareness. And I just think that that's one of the things that coming out of this kind of year, we cannot just put like earmuffs on and block mm-hmm. it all out. We have to feel it, because you can't heal it if you don't feel it. And I think that's part of what this work can do.
So what called you to this story? I'm looking at some of the other things you've directed and what your credits are. Why was this story important to you?
It's interesting. So Scott Spence, the artistic director of the theater, they had already slated it to go into their season and we're looking for directors for it. And he called me based off seeing, my production of Blood at the Root that I directed for Cleveland State and just knowing my work as an actor. And I have recently transitioned professionally as well into doing more diversity, equity, and inclusion work, even in my new position right now. So it's a story that I think fits where I'm going. You know, I'll say this, it was daunting. And when I first read the script, I said to myself, not after COVID, like I want a Black joy story, you know? It's interesting because I started learning about the organization called Until Freedom, right? And I don't, you know, interact with them. I'm not part of that group, but I mean, I would love to be, you know, but the name of it is what is the kind of thing that said, no, I have to do it because I don't get to take a break from it. I never get to take Black off and leave it at home and go out into the world. And so given an opportunity to help tell a story like this that can create pathways for empathy and healing for other people, when it was brought to me, I had to, you know, I decided to, I didn't have to, but I decided that it was worth pushing through emotionally to tell this story. And once you are hit with the initial sadness and devastation of it, what's on the other side of that? And that's what's making me do it, because you cannot sustain the work if you can't get past the sadness. And so much of the work that I do as an artist and a professional in the DEI world is pushing past the sadness of the reality of the state of our situation as people of color, as women, the whole LGBTQ movement, like, right. There's so much sadness that is a result of a lack of diversity, a lack of equity, and a lack of inclusion, and intentional injustice. But once you push back past that, then you can really get to work. You know, so many of us stop where our emotional capacity forces us to. And mm-hmm. so that's why I said yes. And I was reluctant. Even my husband was like, you know, that's tough for you. The whole prison system and injustice and wrong. That's tough for me. And I don't like to watch movies about it. And, you right. know, I don't want to see lockup and First 48. Like, I am just like, no, thank you, because it's just too much. And so it felt to me, if I don't help someone because it's too much for me to hear about it, but you lived it.
Right.
What does that say? You know, and so often this year specifically, I've had, you know, in trainings that I facilitated and in a lot of the work that I do, one of the hardest things for any person that is part of a marginalized group to hear is how difficult it is for other people to learn about something that's so awful that other people live through, right? So you can't even engage in the work because it's hard to hear and it's hard to imagine and it makes you sad versus living it every day. And so I was like, can I do that? No, I'm not going to do that. So I had to push. And the fact that these are six real people stories, that's six real people. It's an important story to tell for an important reason.
Like, I applaud you for that because, you know, the idea that we have to keep going. And even though sometimes we say, well, we can't stop being Black, we can also still check out. And like you said, that's why I asked the question about how do you leave? Because there's plenty of movies where I'm like, oh, I don't want to walk out of the theater feeling all downtrodden and hopeless.
And
that's why that question was so important. Nor do I.
And I don't watch them.
And there's a lot of folks like that. And there's a lot of folks like that. And that's why I thought it was important to ask that question, because, you know, here at Black Girl, we never want you to come away from one of our experiences or something that we are like, hey, you got to try this out, and you feel worse than when you got there. You know, exactly. Life is hard enough. So I applaud you for doing this, because also knowing that you feel that kind of way means that you're going to let that story be told a different kind of way.
A different kind of way, because I am real. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. I don't watch movies that are going to, or, you know, there are educational moments that I push myself through. Right.
Right.
But from entertainment perspective, movies or things like that, that I know are about a certain subject matter that is hard for me to close my eyes and make it go away. You know, I just don't indulge. And you're correct. Like, part of me was saying, I don't want to do that to someone that I wouldn't want to experience it. You know, there's a 50-50 chance that if I saw this show was being done somewhere, I would not go see it because I would be afraid of how I would feel when I left, you know? Yes. And so I am considering that person in the way that we are artistically going to mount this show. And I'm considering that person in two ways. One, there are times when that person has to kind of push past that and just to see what they can learn and how they can be of service. And also recognizing and acknowledging the state which a lot of us are in because of what we've endured collectively. It is very rare that we as a nation, a planet, experience the same thing at the same time. You know, most of the things we talk about as Black people, people sit on the outside of that conversation, so they're not able to relate. But when you say, if you just say COVID, it hit us in the same way at different levels, right? There are things that are universal about this experience. And I think that collective suffering that we went through, that collective fight back, the collective endurance, I think I want to keep that momentum, right? Let's have this collective experience. Now looking at it as not an us and them. Everyone you see on the stage is part of the us. And so instead of these separate people with their separate experience, let's keep that we're all in this together mindset and look at what happened to six of us, you know? And I think that is important. You have to take consideration the state in which people are coming into your space. It would be ridiculous for me to direct this piece as if the pandemic didn't happen. But we've got heightened sensitivity, heightened loss, joint grief, super awareness of mental health conditions and just by the isolation that we felt. I mean, if you think about how casually people have referred to the isolation connected to COVID as being like they were in jail. You know, I heard someone mention it the other day. It's like I've been locked up. It's like I've been locked up. Not exactly, right? But it's so easy for us to throw that out there because there's a lack of awareness. But you feel like that isolation gives you a, you've never felt that type of isolation. So, there's a lot to be gained from it. Not to say I'm not still nervous, not to say that people won't still come away with a heaviness, you know, but sometimes that's what it takes to move you. And the piece is written well. So there is humor in it. There's joy in it. And again, they all got their freedom, right? It's just hard for us as humans to read the story and not focus solely on the worst part of it, because that's the part that sticks in your brain and makes your heart ache for people when you think about what they went through, not that they got through. So it's a joint venture, you know, not discounting that awful experience, celebrating your victory on this other side. How can we get this kind of victory for other people? How can we keep it from happening in the long run? And how can we take care of people who have had something like this happen to them?
So I think, and I'm going to ask you a question that you have no control over, but I think you'll get it when I ask that question. When you think of the end of the show and you guys come out, take your final bow, who would you like to see in the audience? And I'll tell you why I asked that. Many times we have stories about us, and I've been in places where I'm like, oh my goodness, this is a story about us. Like, we should be there. And I'm one of the few Black people in the audience. And like, I'm stunned because it's a story maybe, and some are like upbeat stories. And I'm like, we all love the musical. We all love this group. We love this song, you know, like, and it's a story about their life and we don't show up. And I look at the audience and it's, you know, older white people that, you know, might've been freedom riders or wanted to be or lived through that time. Who would you like to see? You know, because I know the stories aren't all African-American males, which many people think of for whatever reason, like jail must be a Black man issue. And it's not. So who should come?
So that's a great question. I mean, I think my gut answer is everyone. One of the things that I thought was exciting about this piece is that so often stories that when you know, are for us, and I say that too, which is why I smile when you said it, you feel a little exposed when the audience is fully white watching that story. And you're like, wait, what's going on? But why I think it's super important that this be an audience of everyone is because, and even more specifically, I'll say maybe I'm hoping there are a lot of white people that come. And I'm talking about the white people or the non-Black people, let's say that, who really think that the system or the complaints about the system are unfounded and only come from Black faces, right? Because when you get here and you see that these stories are not just us, once you realize it can happen to you too, because you see the story of a white man that it happened to and a white woman that it happened to, then all of a sudden you care a little bit more.
Right.
So to me, I want the people who think that, oh, they're just complaining. Oh, it's not that bad. Because I want you to have an opportunity to, you know, realize just it is. You know, I say everybody because Black people in the audience who understand how we've been abused by the justice system will be able to relate. But I don't think it will be new information for us. Right. I don't think most people of color will be like, oh, that never happens. We know it happens. You know, it's kind of part of woven into our existence in this country. Like, you don't really have to be doing anything. It's clean, Black while breathing. Right. So we're aware of that. I really want the people who don't believe to be in the audience.
Okay.
The people, yeah, that's because this is the kind of story that can shut your mouth, you know, and can say, oh gosh, because you know it's based off true experiences, and then you get to see yourself as victim and as prosecutor, as all the things. and you'll see, and they will be able to see how your silence can make you complicit, but you're just saying it doesn't happen and it's not real is not valid.
That's awesome. So can you tell me about your cast a little bit? Like, who are you working with on this?
Well, we go into our callbacks on tomorrow.
Okay, so you don't know yet.
It's not finalized yet, but I'm excited. We had our first set of auditions this past week, Monday and Tuesday, and had some wonderful people come. So it's going to be difficult decisions I have to make over the next couple of days, but I'm just excited. And one of the things, I'll just be honest, I'm excited that people are ready to come back to the theater. You know, one of the things that was most uplifting in this process was people were coming into the audition space and just stopping for a second and taking a breath, because it's like their first audition in over a year and a half, you know, and just to be back in the space. It was an emotional day for most of the auditioners, just to be back into a space we took for granted we could come into. You spend years and nights and hours of your life in the theater, then all of a sudden they're shut down for a year and a half. So, you know, we're going to have a strong cast because we have a very talented pool. I'm excited that people are excited about telling this story. And you don't audition to tell a story like this unless you feel like it's important. And so I'm excited to just have people who are like-minded coming to the work and understanding the importance of telling other people's stories. As actors, that's what we do anyway. We tell other people's stories. But to tell a story like this in a time like this is emotionally expensive. I'll just call it that, you know? And it takes courage to say, I want to be a part of that. So I'm excited. When I was seeing the names on my list, I just kept getting excited.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Like, so I will say I haven't been back to a theater yet. I just recently went into a movie theater, and that was kind of, it felt odd, you know, just because I haven't been in a general theater. I've done some of the like buy your ticket private viewings, but I have not been back to see a show, and I am a lover of live theater. And so I can't wait for that moment. I should probably figure out what that show is. Maybe it'll be your show that like, do you just go and sit and have that emotional experience with live theater?
Yeah. I mean, people who it's interesting because I know as an artist, as a creator of work, what it felt like to me to walk back in. But the way that people who are audience members are describing how they feel walking back in, it feels like a victory. It is part of our endurance story, you know, the fact that people are, and so the butts in the seats are an evidence of the resilience of the human spirit and the bravery and the courage and the, you know, perseverance to get back to something that matters. It's remarkable. You don't, you know, it's cliche, but you don't really realize what you've got till it's gone.
Absolutely.
And if you spent the last, for me, 30 years in a theater space, and to have it completely not an option for you, was heartbreaking. It was heartbreaking. And so we want to enter back into the space with care, you know, being very, very on top of the safety of all involved, having it at the highest priority for us. And it does mean quite a few restrictions in our, you know, that we're not accustomed to, that we're willing to adapt to just to be able to make our art. It's an exciting time. And if we're all careful, cautious, considerate, and
that's the big one.
Yeah. And consistent. I think that we can be successful.
So you mentioned earlier about, like you said, sometimes educators will come to the show and now they're better dealing with students, you know, being more trauma informed. And I want to touch on that because you do, like you said, some DEI work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what does that mean to be trauma informed? As in, how can people know more, or like, what's the starting tip in that? Because you're right, people do walk around with a lot of things. And even especially during COVID, you know, that's just trauma for many already. Right. And on top of that, how can we operate if you can switch hats a little from director and more into the DEI, although I know they're meshing, mm-hmm. how can people start to begin operating better knowing that in a trauma-informed way?
It's a great question. And I think you pinpointed a great entry point. You know, if you consider what you've experienced and how it impacted you and the fact that we all went through COVID together, and but its effects on us individually vary based on what we were not able to do, what we had to pivot to, right? And how you want people to consider your experience without being in your business. That's kind of what I think of trauma informed, right? In my interactions with people, I want them to be as safe as possible. It's easier for us to think about when we talk about students, because you want to create a safe space. That's what we talk about, a safe classroom. And that means safe emotionally, in that I don't need you to tell me or disclose to me the things that you've gone through, but I need to create a space where no matter what you've gone through, I have some grace for how you experience things. So, you know, my voice could be, some people can respond to a commanding voice, while other people, it impacts them differently based on some, you know, anything about the way that they grew up. And being mindful that I might have to adjust my voice for different students. That's something I learned as an educator, being trauma-informed, because if my approach, just my voice, creates a barrier to your learning because of an experience that you had that you cannot shake, that is not your fault, right? And it's my job to kind of be aware, you know, in my senses at least, of how people feel in that space. And so I think as adults, and what you can take in the way that we interact with each other, is just don't just assume that people have things about them you don't know. And if you know your secrets, so, and maybe they're not just secrets, but it's your business. It's the mm-hmm. things that created you, the things that you've endured, experienced, that got you to who you are, but they cause you to react to things a different way, look at the world in a different way. And so if you just consider, if we're considerate of the way people need to be in this COVID space, and I just use it because it's relevant and it's universal, right? So a person who has had COVID and survived it may be operate differently in Walmart than a person who never had it and thought it was a hoax, right? So if you think it's not real, but it was very real for me because I had it, we have different experiences and approaches and lenses through which we look at the safety of today. Now, I'll take it another step further. If you lost family members to it, but it didn't directly affect you, you also know how real it is in a serious loss type of way. You lost a year and a half of your life just with things being shut down, but then you lost people you care about. So we don't go into a space and say, what's everybody's COVID comfort level? No, you just need to be considerate of the fact that those levels vary into everybody I'm going to encounter in this space. So my trauma informedness is just being considerate of what you need to feel okay in this space. If you need me to wear a mask so you feel okay, I can do that. You know, if you are like, oh, it's optional, then you've expressed to me your level of comfort. But if the person over here is feeling fragile, it doesn't cost me anything to be considerate. And so to me, that's kind of what trauma-informed is. You have to be a little bit more aware, and you kind of got to get over yourself a little bit, because you're not centering your experience. You're centering the idea that you want to create a space safe for people with a bunch of different experiences. And so how do we do that? You know, it's hard to put into exact directions, mm-hmm. but if you just can think about yourself, which most of us can do really, really well, if you think about what you need, you just have to imagine that other people have needs as well. And while you don't want to disclose yours, you just want to feel safe to exist the way you need to exist in a space, think that other people need to do that too. And whatever your position of power is to ensure that space is safe, contribute to it positively.
So the first thing I heard, my reaction to what you were saying and the thought process was the opposite of trauma-informed. And I kept thinking of the people that just said, well, that's just how I am. If they don't like it, that's just too bad. Like, we can't go into that. You know, I don't care. I'm so sorry your grandma died of COVID, but like, that's just, I'm going to keep it real. Like, that is the opposite of trauma-informed. And I'm just trying to process it. Like, I'm not trying to take away from anything you said, but
yeah,
I just think about how we interact with people, you know.
And that's, it's, and that it's harshness. It's crazy when you think about it, right? Because some of the things that come out of people's mouths shock you. And then if all of a sudden, if the roles were reversed, right? Because I try to think about, what are the things that cause us to change our behavior? And they're usually experiences that we have. So even when we talk about from a DEI lens with inclusion, talk about, you know, people in the LGBTQ community, people have they have ideas, they have feelings about it, they have opinions about, you know, how people live their lives. And then when they have a family member who says, I'm part of an LGBTQ community, then all of a sudden they typically are more accepting, more kind. I mean, now they want to be in a parade. You know what I mean? Like, it, yep. But it takes that proximity to have an ability to treat an entire group of people with compassion and as human beings. And so if we skip that step, right, I don't have to actually have had your experience or your perspective to value you as a person, to treat you with the care and compassion you need to be okay in this space. That to me is what trauma informed is, like taking out that piece that I only care if it impacts me directly. It should impact you directly because you're sharing a space with someone who it impacts.
Absolutely. Coexisting
and having respect. You don't have to, you know, people say that you have to agree with me, but if you disagree with me with such a bad attitude, I can feel that, you know,
right.
Just, I don't need to know how you feel about it, about everything. Just know that we might not feel the same way, but how can we be respectful for each other in the shared space? Because, you know, I think that's really what it comes down to. We're talking shared spaces. I'm not asking you to consider me when you get home, but right. When we have to be in shared space with each other, the combativeness is not necessary. You know, we're all emotionally on edge. For some of us, I mean, if you just think about the immunocompromised and we can't mm-hmm. tell that they are, right? And they have felt very vulnerable in this time. A lot of people have.
Right.
There is a fear. And to feel that way for a year and a half has an emotional and a mental impact. And so when you go into spaces that you used to go into, some people are entering in with caution. And then the other people are entering in with reckless abandon. Like, I'm so happy to be free. Don't bind right. me anymore, you know? But where is that happy medium? How do we just consider everybody from all their experiences? I should not have to tell you my tragedy for you to treat me with respect. And I think that's really what it comes down to. You don't need my trauma story. If that's what it takes, then your intentions aren't to be inclusive anyway, you know? And that's, I think people just need to come into reality of that selfish way of thinking is just that. It's selfish. And people, you can employ that into everything that you do, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, like, this conversation is blowing me away because it's, yes, exonerated and how all this impacts back to the play, but just really, you know, in my mission of just being better to people. And, you know, you said all the words like safe space, because that's the one thing that I pride myself on here at Black Girl is how can we be a safe space for people? And that's why we look at events in a better way or a lighthearted way, because you don't know what people's carrying. I don't want you to go home and feel worse, you know, because now we're dogging some business or whatever. And I think it's just all of that, how it all meshes into the culture of today. So while we're looking at this one story of the exonerated, you know, like you said, the COVID analogy is definitely kind of running parallel of mm-hmm. understanding. And, you know, when you think about kids or even think about how we, and I'll say we as a broad stroke, as African-Americans often feel traumatized and how we have to operate in the world and the microaggressions that we feel because people aren't being trauma-informed or they're telling us they're trauma-informed. I'm trauma-informed, so I get it because I talk to Black people, so I know you're, and it's like, you don't still know the story or you don't understand the lived experience because you've read about something or saw a story on the news. And so, you know, like I just, thank you for sharing all of this.
And, no, I appreciate it. You know, I'm just passionate about it because it sucks that the world sucks. It sucks that people suck. It just sucks that people treat each other so poorly. And it's
that's a great quote right there.
What? It sucks that the world sucks.
It sucks that people suck. Like the whole thing was just pitch perfect right there.
You know, because it does. It's exhausting. And you're right. Like I read a story and I'm going to mess it up, but it was like a actual scientific study about just how it feels to be a Black woman in the United States, how they even talked about the fact that it's almost as if you're it's like we breathe at half capacity at all at all times. And a lot of people can't understand that that's what you carry with you throughout every day, all the time. And we get so accustomed to it that people don't see it as suffering. They don't see it as putting us at a disadvantage because we're good at doing it anyway. And yeah, you know, and so they take for granted the struggle because we make it look easy, but it is exhausting. And, you know, and that's why it's frustrating when people say, I didn't realize, I didn't know, I never imagined, that can't be true. And it is your every single moment of every single day. And so you're correct. Like, I don't want to have to come and tell you that to get you to treat me with respect or to get you to value my contribution in the same way. I don't want to have a special section of consideration but that's what's happening now because people are just becoming aware of how we have been treated and how we continue to be treated. And it takes a lot of energy to get up and be a Black woman every day. It takes a lot of energy to get up and be a person every day, but it takes a lot of energy to get up and just be a Black woman every day. The expectations are so high, you know, anything you do isn't just for you. You're representing a whole bunch of people, even though you scream from the top of a mountain, I am just myself, right? We are hundreds of years from when that will be something that just people get, you know? So I applaud you for creating a platform like this where people do feel safe to come and have these conversations and just explore the ideas and the way that they impact us. You know, if I can, with the other stuff that I'm doing as a person, consider other people in my day-to-day interactions, you can do it too. And if we will all just do it a little bit more, it would suck a little less, you know? I just believe that. And I don't think if we have not learned anything else from COVID, it should be that just do better, you know, like you just really, because I mean, I'm telling you, in a room of 10 people, COVID's impact is 10 different ways, but it's the same thing. And we endured it for the same time period. And we need 7 different things, you know? And I just think we can all, if we can solve all that as it relates to COVID, we can do it as it relates to all the other things that we tackle, all the other DEI issues and challenges that we face. If we can be COVID considerate, we can be everything else considerate too.
So let me just say, as we're wrapping up, number one, I need to thank the Beck Center for saying, I need to talk to you. Cause like, this has been an amazing conversation.
I'm so glad
to have you on and talk, and we could clearly just keep talking. And I hope we do. I hope we get to talk again.
I wanted to say
thank you for coming on today, and give everyone the dates that your show is running.
Yes. So it runs.
The Exonerated. Let's say the show.
The Exonerated runs. Well, it opens October 8th at the Beck Center.
Until November 7th.
That's correct. And you can go to the website for ticketing information and just information about how we can connect with other parts of the community impacted by what we're talking about there. One of our goals is to make sure we don't just tell these stories, but we are actively involved in helping to support people with this as their lived experience in some way in our greater Cleveland area and on a national level.
And we'll put the link, the ticket link, right in our show notes so people can get the show and buy the tickets. How can people follow, connect with you or support your work outside of this?
Yeah, you know, I am trying to make myself be more social media present. But I do have Facebook. I'm Facebook Colleen Longshaw, which is my equity name, my actor name, my maiden name. And I'm on Instagram as CocoLocal_13. And yeah, you know, I do a lot of things. I wear a lot of different hats, and I'm excited to see where I go from here. It's interesting because, you know, having to turn down performing work to do directing work, it's a great position to be in, right? To have options. And I have done so much storytelling as an actor, and I thought it was really important to, from an activism standpoint and from an impact making standpoint, to try and take on work like this as a director. So I'm excited for everyone to see it, to talk about it, and I want to hear what you think.
Awesome. So again, definitely check out The Exonerated at the Beck Center, beckcenter.org. And today my guest was Colleen Jackson as the director of The Exonerated. I wanted to make sure I had the right name for the director versus the actor. And
so funny. That's why I just should hyphenate and get over it.
I was the same way. Like, you know, teacher me, like based on how you call me, I know who, where you come from.
Where that's you know cool me thing. From. But, yeah. That's necessary.
So thanks, everyone, for listening. Thank you for your time. And definitely go check out the show. And thank you, Beck Center.
Awesome.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Black Girl in CLE, the podcast. Please check us out online at www.blackgirlincle.com and like and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at BlackGirlincle. This podcast was recorded in Cleveland, Ohio, with post-production by the talented interns at Black Girl Media. Copyright 2019, all rights reserved and retained by Black Girl Media, LLC. Talk to you next time.